This weekend is the Newport Folk Festival, and a musician and thinker and friend of mine, Adia Victoria, is going to be on stage recording for her podcast, Call and Response. This will be a special series of talks, which you can hear on the Call and Response podcast feed. The show relaunches for its second season in September. Subscribe and catch a peek into what's happening at the historic Newport Folk Festival this weekend. Hi, everyone. Before we get started with this week's episode, I just wanted to acknowledge the immense loss and the passing of Biz Markie. The news was especially heartbreaking to me because Biz Markie is one of my earliest and most exciting entry points into rap music. My oldest brother would play the song I'll Be Square Mall in his car nonstop when I was a kid. And there was a way that it kind of earwormed itself into my brain, even as a 6, 7, 8 year old. I didn't know who Biz Markie was. I knew nothing about anything other than I loved the song. This thing happens, I think, when artists, particularly rap artists, have one massive hit that endures and is transformed and is covered and becomes a part of the cultural zeitgeist in a way that sometimes obscures the fullness of what they offered. And the reason that a song like Just a Friend is so resonant is because of Biz Markie's enduring eternal strength to have choruses that just really set in your mind, in your heart, in your body, and never leave. Biz Markie's album, Biz Never Sleeps, is one of my favorite rap albums of all time. He was both funny and tender, but also an immensely sharp narrator and an incredible storyteller. And I'm thankful that we got him for as long as we did. And I'm going to miss Biz Markie a lot. Next week, we're going to have a special episode on Biz Markie's life, legacy, and career. You're listening to Object of Sound from Sonos, the show where we bring you in tune with the music that shapes our culture. When music lives in the air, it's one thing. But when you know the undercurrents and the ideas that went into a song, when you can feel its weight, it becomes more meaningful. I'm Hanif Abdurraqib, a poet and culture critic, and I'll be your guide as we seek a deeper way of listening. It is July. At the time of recording this, it is what feels like to me the exact middle of the summer. It's hot. Where I'm at, it is humid and sticky. And each year, there's a lot of conversation about what the song of the summer will be, which is also a way of asking what the energy of the summer will bring, what the moment of the summer is about. I've been on the internet, and I've been seeing this hum of people talking about how the vibe of this summer is reminiscent to the summer of 2016. The somewhat facade of a carefree nature laid atop a tenuous and precarious social and political backdrop. And what I remember most about the summer of 2016 is that in the midst of everything else that was happening, there was... These were songs that felt like they could take the title Song of the Summer, but the Song of the Summer is also laden with the politics of marketing. And now, in the age of hyper-virality and TikTok, I'm wondering if there could even be a universal Song of the Summer that actually endures beyond the season. And so for this episode, I wanted to bring in some friends who are also experts in the field of pop music to walk through this idea. Wesley, what's up? How are you doing?
I am very good, Hanif. Nice to talk to you. How are you doing?
That's the voice of Wesley Morris, New York Times culture critic and host of one of my favorite podcasts, Still Processing. I would love to talk to you about songs of the summer. I am actually not a very summery person. Mm-hmm. I tend to wear hoodies all year long, though not always outdoors. I think it's like I grew up as a goth, that whole thing. And I tend to understand songs of the summer purely by way of emotional extraction, like what they can pull out of me. Mm-hmm. But also, I've been thinking about this kind of what I deem uselessness of the distinction of the song of the summer, because it assumes that we are all unknowingly entering into a contract to declare one song as a song of the summer, whether or not we are at all invested in it, right? So the song of the summer—
That's the contract. That is we are in that contract.
So you think that's a useful contract?
Oh, yes, 100%. Like, I totally believe in the song of the summer contract. I truly do. The song of the summer is the song that whether you like it or not, whether you hate the fuck out of it or truly love it, it's the song that you can't escape because it's just everywhere. It's in every bodega, coming out of every car window. You can't go into a supermarket or a Target or a CVS. You can't go to a party or a club without hearing that song in some form. And some summers, there are several options, but at some point it becomes clear that there's just one song that just occupies that space. And increasingly, those things are harder to come by.
Right.
Like last summer, and I probably this summer too, you know, collective space is just different and being exposed to other people's music is different. I think the primacy of the radio, we're way past that at this point, but I think the radio had a huge impact on that in some ways. It's not a thing where like you, Hanif, or I, Wesley, can say, no, I think this. It's a quantifiable answer what the song of the summer is in many ways too.
And so the main virtue of a song of the summer is inescapability, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm. I would say.
And so I think that, like you said, I mean, that brings up some complications for this summer and for last summer, but I've found my comfort, at least in the past two summers, with songs that I have loved before that are certain. But I'm also just like not hearing stuff.
Neither am I. You're not alone in that sense, because what I'm hearing coming out of cars right now are old songs, right? I think we're all in the mood for old stuff. And I do find it really interesting that, you know, in the middle of the summer, we're celebrating Joni Mitchell's Blue turning 50.
Songs are like tattoos, you know, I've been to see before. Crown and anchor me.
You know, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis put out this album that sounds like it was made in 1999/2006. But I don't think it's nostalgia. It's like a comfort in a moment we've already lived through, not a wishing that we could be back in that moment.
Oh, that's an interesting distinction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I always feel like there's nothing like the summer for me where I finished high school but hadn't yet gone off to college.
Mm.
Like that summer in between, there's a lot of freedom. Yeah. You don't have to like, you're kind of rushing into the unknown. And I don't really want to live in those times. Mm-hmm. But I want a journey through the mental and emotional landscape that existed then without having to transport myself, if that makes sense. And music is the easiest way to do that.
You know, I have a moment, you know, some point in most seasons where I want to listen to something that I remember listening to during a certain time of year. Not to take me back to that period, but because it's the music that feels most right for this particular time.
Kelly, can you handle this? Michelle, can you handle this? Beyonce, can you handle this? I don't think they can handle this.
Bootylicious, for instance, is a song that, you know, I don't need to really ever hear that song again. But sometimes I want a song that feels like a summer. Maybe not this summer, but it's a summer song. And I can put it on and just be like, yeah, it's June. It's just June. Bootylicious is a song like that for me.
What makes up that, like sonically though, what are the elements that make up that feeling for you?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I didn't think about the musical logical explanation. I just, that was a song that came out in the summer of whatever summer that was, 2000. And that was a summer song. You know, there are other such things. I mean, I was thinking about like Call Me Maybe. Hey, I just met you. That was the song of that summer, like 2012 or whatever. But it also, if you were there and you kind of even liked it a little bit, that's a song where if it comes on, you're just like, oh, summer.
I'm interested in this journey of like, because there are songs of the summer that a perfect example of this is Trap Queen. a song that I began not liking a lot or feeling immense complication towards.
Here's the other part. Here's the other part.
And then it just becomes a part of you. There's this thing that's happened for me in the past where I'm attempting to escape and the song is inescapable, and then I become someone who's like seeking the song. Mm-hmm. Like I'm being chased and then I begin chasing.
That's a great way to put it.
There's something about that too where I think the quality of a song of the summer has to be the way it embeds itself into your routine or your living.
Yes, yes. I mean, Despacito was like that for me.
Oh, yeah. Come and move that in my direction. So thankful for that. It's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah.
Oh, you are my sunrise on the dark. I was immune to that song because I really didn't like the Justin Bieber version. And that was the first version that I heard. And then at some point, some stations just wanted the Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, no Justin Bieber, which is the only version for me, right? But anyway, I was immune to it for a long time. And then I distinctly remember being in a club kind of at the peak of its run and they played it. The place goes nuts. And I was like, I love this song so much. I didn't even know it. I didn't even know I loved it because I was so immune. And it's also one of those things, Hanif, where I had never voluntarily listened to it. I had never chosen to listen to Despacito.
Yeah.
That's how ubiquitous that song was. Despacito. Quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído.
Para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito. Is part of this communal too, though?
Because totally communal.
I've been thinking about how I have not watched other people enjoy much of anything collectively in a long time. I did go to a movie theater recently. I saw Fast 9.
Oh, my condolences.
But I will say that's the first watching Fast 9 in a theater with maybe like 18 other people was the first time I'd witnessed a group collectively enjoying anything in so long. And it was fascinating. It made me kind of crave any kind of music experience that had that energy, not even a live music experience, just a song that everyone knows coming on in a place where everyone knows the song. So next summer, if we are to imagine that next summer is a little bit more communal than this summer, do you envision a return to this kind of song of the summer contract being lived out in the way it was before, or do you think we're kind of we're past the point where this is even a usable, workable contract?
That's a great question. I don't know. The culture will tell us. The people will tell us, right? Like the song will tell us. Maybe it's not next summer. Maybe it's not the summer after that. But at some point, we will have a song of the summer again. We just will.
Wesley, can you tell me what you have as your candidates for the song of the summer?
De Museo.
You know,
like that would be my vote. I mean, I don't get a vote. De Museo, by the way, is Bad Bunny for anybody who doesn't know. Jenna Wortham has been sending me songs. She sent me the Doja Cat song. I tend to resist her, not Jenna, but Doja Cat. I don't want to fall for that because it just seems so, I don't know, insipid. I'll start with those two. What do you got?
Against my better impulses, I do think Ed Sheeran's Bad Habits is going to make a run. My bad habits lead to late nights and in alone conversations with a stranger I barely know. It can be played in grocery stores, I feel like. That's what it is.
But see, we're going to get into this, but I have not heard this song in the wild yet.
I also haven't heard it in the wild yet. But I do think a song of the summer has to effectively not be offensive to suburbanites if it plays in a grocery store. There are some exceptions. I mean, like, Trap Queen was getting played everywhere. Mm-hmm, and, like...
Mm-hmm. But most people don't know what that song was about.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that, like, soccer parents picking up kids in minivans, just like, just like the chorus. They didn't really understand the song. So I think that's got to be the thing. Either there has to be something that folks don't understand or something that Whole Foods would not mind inoffensively playing on the loudspeakers. Mm-hmm.
I hate to put it this way, but this is why Despacito was such an enormous hit.
That's true. It's true.
Just sounded so good, and nobody knew what they were supposed to be doing slower.
Leslie, it's always good to talk to you. Hope we do it again soon.
Same here. Always good to talk to you.
With any luck, we will have a Song of the Summer again next summer. I hope for your sake Justin Bieber is not on it, though. 50-50. It feels like always 50-50 with Bieber.
Always 50-50 with Bieber. I'm still hung up on Baby. That's the best Bieber song still.
Wesley Morris is a critic and writer at the New York Times, as well as a host of the podcast Still Processing, which he hosts alongside Jenna Wortham. There is one song that has been undeniably in the running for Song of the Summer this year. I'm told it's been playing in stores and on radio stations. The cover art for this artist's upcoming album went viral. And the song is Lorde's Solar Power. Forget all of the tears that you've cried. It's over. Now, I personally have not been out in the world enough to hear Solar Power's impact. But next on the show, I'm having two guests who have their own thoughts about whether it is, in fact, the song of the summer. Nate Sloan and Charlie Harding are the hosts of the hit music podcast Switched on Pop, about the making and meaning of popular music. Every Tuesday, the two sit down with leading musicians, journalists, and thinkers to decode our modern soundtrack. Hey, Nate. Hey, Charlie. Good to see you. Good to talk.
Thanks, Hanif. Great to be here, Hanif.
I am wondering if you all have any feelings about songs of the summer broadly, but Solar Power being the song of this summer.
My first reaction is that this is a summer song, but maybe not a song of summer. Charles, what do you think?
I feel similarly, that it is definitely working very hard at trying to be the song of summer, as many songs do this time of season. I think it's operating on a couple of different planes. One is obviously, how do you follow up being Lorde, right? Someone whose record's pure heroin and melodrama effectively helped inform the sound of popular music over the last almost 10 years. And we'll never be royals. It's a one in our blood. That kind of love's just ain't for us. So there's the first challenge of, like, what is the song trying to accomplish as a reset of what's Lorde's next project going to be? We're getting an upbeat acoustic song, feels like just a summer jam, and I think that it succeeds in helping set expectations of where she's trying to go. On first impression, it's not about making a deep, profound statement. Like, it's just a fun song. And yet, thinking about, like, what is the song trying to accomplish, I think it's trying to sneak in being a song of summer while simultaneously being a pagan sun worship goddess song.
So the dialogue that I've seen is how it's like trying to sneakily be a song of summer. And I think there's actually a strong deliberate nature to this. Lyrically, at least. I feel like the opening verse itself is, it's kind of like a call to get outside in a way that, yes, we can play around with the extension of metaphor throughout the song. But really, I don't know if a lot of people playing this out of their car and from the radio or in the Target over the loudspeakers or at the bar are going to be extending these metaphors about loving the sun. It's just going to be like, this shit is about how good it feels to be warm.
Yeah.
When it comes to the construct of a song of the summer, I maybe lean more towards songs that sonically feel warm, where the language is not doing the work, but the sound is.
I feel like if I can be generous to the production, I'd say that maybe the opening for me feels like we're inside being greeted to go outside throughout as the song unfolds. Because I actually really don't like how these guitars are produced. They are so close mic'd that it's overly bassy.
I hate the winter. Can't stand the cold.
There's not enough of the shine and treble that you want in the acoustic guitars that actually come in later in the song. In a certain way, it kind of feels like the sort of meta conversation of us all finally being able to step outside in this moment of the ongoing but changing pandemic. And so there's maybe a way in which the production mirrors that, intentional or not, I don't know. But I do enjoy the experience of finally arriving at the final chorus.
I do like the song's close. I especially like, you know, whenever this happens in songs, wherever there's like a large shift in a song and it becomes a different song in its very final act, I think it is best performed when it seems like the singer knows that they're holding on to a secret. I love the moment before that moment where it seems like Lord is almost smiling her way towards the song shifting the volta at the end. That really impresses me and excites me as much as the ending, which I wanted a bit more of. I wish it lingered a bit longer. You know, I think for me, at least, I felt evicted from it before I got to feel it sink in. So when I talk about payoff, you know, for some, they might think that this is, we've eaten the meal, this is our like dessert or what have you. But because of that, I find myself not wanting to have the plate taken away. You know what I mean? I would like to have an option for letting it linger for a while and savoring it for a bit. So it does feel like the sweetness is evicted from the song's architecture before I could really sink into it.
Maybe to borrow your metaphor, Hanif, about being around the table, we do have in the music video of this song a sort of pagan worship Last Supper with Lord as center goddess figure in all yellow, her followers in sort of tattered rag clothing. And she, of course, makes her own allusion to Jesus here in the song. This song is definitely a song of summer song. Most of us listening to it in the background at CVS are for sure just capturing solar power. How fun. But, you know, she's trying to do a little bit more here. And the musical connection that I've seen a number make is to the song Sympathy for the Devil, which does have that amazing long payoff. I think in Sympathy for the Devil, the outro with the hand percussion in a very similar kind of groove is probably half the song, and you want it to keep going and going and going. And I do wonder if Lord and Jack Antonoff had to make the decision of, well, we do want this to play on commercial top 40 radio in 2021, and so let's just chop it off.
To me, I think that's maybe what bugs me a little bit about it, is that it seems like a commercial decision and not really a song-based decision or a structural decision. You know, like when I think about a song like Every Dream, Home, a Heartache by Roxy Music, which also does this thing where it becomes a different song at the end.
But you blew my mind.
It's not half the song. But it's enough. It's loud and frantic. And I feel like you are almost wanting it to end because it feels like you've ascended very slowly to the top of a very tall roller coaster and you're on the way down. I feel like by the time it ends, I'm wanting it to end. But that's satisfying in a way, the thrill that comes after that. And for me, where there are parts of Solar Power, and maybe this is me just being cynical about pop music, which I try not to be because I deeply love pop music. But there are parts of pop songs where I can almost hear a business decision being made. You know what I mean? Or I can hear a how will this play on the radio question being asked. One, let me say, I don't know if there needs to be a song of the summer.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a useful designation anymore. I think we all experience summer differently based off of region, emotional ecosystem, all these things. I've always been a bit skeptical about designating a single song of the summer, but I think it becomes less and less useful as the years go on.
I like to think maybe about songs of summer, the ones that we can pick up on that might be speaking to regional difference, cultural differences in a positive sort of way, and sort of shining the diversity of experiences that might be happening in a North American summer. Mm-hmm. And the one part about that designation that does still hold water for me, I don't really like canonization in general, but what I do enjoy is the idea that sort of a counter to pop music, which is so singularly, it seems today, about individual listening and thinking of songs that can represent our summer, maybe reinvites the idea of the collective a bit.
Yeah.
And in that way, this song is bringing me into a collective, whether silly or quasi-serious, worship of the sun, where I might be able to either step outside or maybe look outside my window and see other people thinking about the same thing. It makes me happier this summer.
Yeah, it strikes me that the question you posed earlier is key here, Hanif. It's like, will this summer be that moment where we all kind of come together physically again? Or is it going to be more what Charlie is describing of sort of still looking at someone through the window and saying like, I see you and you see me, but we're not really here together? This song is like dancing on that razor's edge a little bit.
Yeah. It also dawns on me a little bit when I think about my own personal songs of the summer. The song of the summer is such a trick of nostalgia for me. And I don't know if I'm as interested in forming new memories in the immediate present with a song. Mm. So for example, like when Melodrama came out, and to me, Melodrama was a summer album. It was a big album of the summer, even though it didn't have the vibes lyrically or perhaps sonically for some. But I live in a place where it storms briefly and violently. And Melodrama was kind of a perfect album for that, acting as a companion sound to the rain beating against your vehicle.
Baby really hurt me, crying in the taxi. He don't want to know me, says he made the big mistake of dancing in my storm. Says it was poison.
Melodrama reminds me distinctly of the summer of 2017. And I define it as an album of the summer now, but when it came out and I was listening to it in that summer, it didn't really register to me that this was defining my summer. It was just kind of a soundtrack to my movements. And I wasn't thinking about it. And I sometimes think that the best song of the summer argument is, well, what's the music that hovered without you thinking about it?
This is the retroactive song of summer theory, which I am processing for the first time. And I find it very compelling because I'm sort of applying it to my own experience. And it's really ringing true. It's like, I feel like there's a lot of ink spilled on the prognostication of what will be song of summer. And yet, it's not always something that you can predict or even understand in the moment. It's only in retrospect that you go, oh yeah, that was that moment in my life, that season, and it was defined by this song. And I can only see that clearly now with the benefit of, you know, maybe years of hindsight.
Right. The music I'm listening to right now, I don't know if I'll return to it all summer, but if I do, I think I will do it based off of an impulse that is almost beyond myself. If I'm driving down the main street in my city towards the skyline at sunset, there is a song that I think serves that. And that decision's already been made for me. because I'm looking to evoke an emotion that was already planted the first time I heard that song in that scenario. And so I'm returning to it to recreate the feeling I had once, right? And to me, that's just, that is something that has happened to you and if you're lucky, can be a little outside your control. And you maybe don't realize it until September or October when you look back and you think, well, this song doesn't hit the same now, the sun sets a little earlier, or this song doesn't hit the same now that I got to wear like a fucking coat or whatever. You know, that's the thing, right? I think these things are not, for me, not defined in the moment, but are defined by the shifting of the moments to come.
It's beautiful.
Nate and Charlie, thanks so much for joining me and talking about Lord. It's always a pleasure to talk to y'all, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Hanif.
Charlie Harding and Nate Sloan are the hosts of Switched On Pop, which you can listen to on your favorite podcast app or at switchedonpop.com. You can also follow them at Switched On Pop, all one word. And now for a final thought. You heard me mention the summer after I graduated high school, but before I went off to college, as my greatest summer. It was the first full summer where I had my own car. And my car was a 1992 Nissan Maxima. It was brown. It was not very aesthetically pleasing. It had a electrical malfunction that made it so that anytime I opened the door, the alarm went off. And so I had to take out the fuse that triggered the alarm every time I opened the door. But the fuse that triggered the alarm also ran the stereo. And so it was this whole thing where I had to get in the car, close the door, put in the fuse, start the car, and have the stereo repower. It was a mess. It was a mess, but I loved it. And what I also remember about that summer is that it was 2001, which meant that, at least in my house, there was a computer that had a CD burner on it, which meant that the songs of the summer that I wanted to hear could all be burned onto a CD. I remember distinctly having a CD that in order had Where the Party At by Jagged Edge. Hit 'em Up Style by Blue Cantrell. I Need a Girl Part 2 by Diddy.
Yeah, take that. Come on.
And I think I'm Real by J-Lo and Ja Rule. All these songs kind of built into this carefree tapestry of me and all my friends who were all going off to different schools and parting from each other before we went off into another world and had to be, in some cases, someone a little different for people who did not know us at all. Thinking about those songs takes me back to that time, but also when I hear those songs now, even 2 decades later, I am still very much a 17-year-old in my shitty Nissan Maxima, just driving around with my windows down, listening to mix CDs of songs I made that made me feel like I was very much in the moment of that summer. You've been listening to Object of Sound from Sonos. Big thank you to our guests this week, Wesley Morris, Nate Sloan, and Charlie Harding. To hear all the music in the full version of the show, you can listen on Sonos Radio or find us at mixcloud.com/Sonos. And while you're there, check out the show Shiro's Mixtape Memoir. This week, the guest is Nico Case, and there's also a special episode of Women in Sound featuring the electronic music pioneer Suzanne Ciani. Thinking about going to see live music this summer? We made a special episode all about the return of concerts and festivals. It's being broadcast nationally through our friends at PRX on stations including KUT in Austin, WFAE in Charlotte, Michigan Radio, KOSU in Oklahoma City, and Boise State Public Radio in Idaho. We hope you tune in on your home station, and a podcast version is out now on our feed. check out This Summer of Live Music for perspectives from artists and industry insiders on what it means to gather and listen together again. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. If you like what you hear, go ahead and rate it and share it with your friends. This is a communal thing, music discovery, so tell us what you like about the show and what you're listening to. Let us know your thoughts in an email at objectofsound@sonos.com. You can follow the show at Object of Sound on Instagram and Twitter. This show is produced by Work by Work. Scott Newman, Gemma Rose Brown, Babette Thomas, Mayari Sharina Ong, and by me, Hanif Abdurraqib. The show was mixed by Sam Baer. Extra gratitude to Joe Dawson and Saida Blount at Sonos. I'm always talking about music online on Instagram and Twitter at Neef Muhammad. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for being a part of the show.